Goeienaand weer, baie welkom by Sterre en Planete. Ook welkom aan ons gaste, Jim Adams daar in Amerika. Goeienaand, Jim.
Goeienaand, Henny.
En dan Mati Hofman in Bloemfontein en Willie Koorts in die Kaap. Ons gesels natuurlik eenmaal 'n maand met Jim Adams, redelik uitvoerig. En daar's 'n interessante story, Jim. It's an interesting story. The way a flame in space reacts to microgravity. Is that important?
Oh, it's terribly important. And if you were to look, if you were to light a candle on the International Space Station, it wouldn't look like it does on Earth. On Earth, the gravity kind of holds the heavier gases down, and then the lighter gases are buoyant and they float up into space. And so you end up with this characteristic teardrop shape for a fire flame. On the International Space Station, they've actually got this experiment that where they were able to play with fire on the International Space Station. And the flames look a little bit more like spheres, or maybe a little bit like if you were to light a candle, it might look like a dandelion almost. You know, it's just a ball around. And it has to do with the fact that there's less gravity creating a gradient buoyancy effect in the International Space Station.
I think you can probably summarize it by saying that in microgravity, hot air doesn't rise. I mean, that's fundamentally yes. what's wrong here.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it still displaces the colder air, but it doesn't want to rise.
Yeah. Just to link up to that, if you are visiting a restaurant and there's a candle on the table, it's always a nice demonstration for the physicist to explain to the other guests that they should feel the difference. Either keep their hand, say, 2 centimeters on the side of the flame of the candle, and they just then feel the radiation. So they can easily hold their hand there, but they surely can't hold their hand for 2-3 seconds, say 5 centimeters above the candle, so much higher than they were away from the flame on the side. But that's due to the convection, the hot air going up. But that demo will not work in the space station, because if you hold your hand above the candle, it also will also just be the radiation hitting your hand and not any convection.
I wanted to ask you, when you try to light a candle in space or in microgravity, you explained what it looks like, but is it easy to light a candle?
So the thing that creates a flame is a medium and a fuel, an oxidizer and a fuel. And so it's just as easy to light a flame on the space station as it is on Earth, because you've got plenty of oxygen in the atmosphere, and you've got the whatever it is you're trying to burn. It could be a candle wick, could be anything else. So it's not difficult to start a flame. And in fact, that's why NASA studies flames in space, because they want to know how fire will start and propagate on board these future space missions, because you can imagine being in a contained environment and some sort of fire breaks out. I mean, we lost the Apollo 1 astronauts due to that exact problem. So there is this experiment on board the International Space Station called ACME, which is an acronym that stands for Advanced Combustion Via Microgravity Experiments. And since 2017, they have in a controlled way and with a lot of research, they have lit over 1,500 fires for research on board the International Space Station. They were contained and they were small. They changed things like the ratio of fuel to oxygen. They changed the kinds of things that were being lit. They changed whether or not there were electric fields. They measured electric fields. They looked at whether or not they could design flames and make them non-spherical. And they did a number of different things over these 1,500 experiments. And over the time, over 30 astronauts have been involved in these experiments from six different countries on board the International Space Station.
So I suppose nothing changed. When you're little, you want to play with fire, and when you're grown up and you're on the International Space Station. So just a question. Since, I mean, the reason why a candle flame keeps going is the hot air rises and cold oxygen, well, not necessarily cold, but in this case, because it's lower and cold, oxygenated air flows in from the bottom and keep feeding the flame. So I assume that because on the International Space Station, the oxygen in the immediate vicinity is used up, but there's no influx of fresh air, fresh oxygenated air coming in, a flame will actually put itself out. Is that possible?
Well, you know, I think that was one of the theories that they were testing. And at the moment, I don't know that they actually got an answer to that, because I know that they found that they could keep a sustained flame going. Maybe there's ways that the way the flame behaves, you know, it starts to run out of oxygen and part of it collapses and it gets another gasp of air that it uses to get the oxygen. To be honest, I don't know the research that deeply to be able to say exactly how that happens, but I do know that the flames can be sustainable.
Okay.
So if you have to light a birthday cake in space, it's more of a challenge or not?
Yeah. Well, I think it would look very different than my cake might look like tonight. Tonight is my 65th birthday.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Congratulations. Yeah,
I made it that far. And I did play with matches when I was in the woods when I was a kid.
we hope it doesn't mean that you will now retire from Sterre and Planete, because in South Africa, 65 is a typical retirement age.
Jim, there's an interesting story. It sort of appeared the past few days, of so-called satellites falling off the sky as a result of solar activity. Is that something to be alarmed of?
Well, no. It's not gonna, like things are going to fall on your head. But what's happening is the sun is entering a cycle where it's going to be more a phase of the cycle where it's going to be more active. And when the sun gets active, then it heats the atmosphere and it sends particles into the atmosphere, which raises the density of the Earth's atmosphere. The density of the atmosphere then means that the top of the atmosphere expands just a little bit. So some of these satellites that are being launched today, like the Starlinks, they're launched very low. It's almost like they're skimming just the top of the atmosphere. And so if that atmosphere raises just a little bit, then the spacecraft experiences more drag than they expected, than the mission planners had expected. And so when that happens, the satellites sometimes can't recover. Several months ago, Starlink lost 40 of 49 spacecraft that they launched because of the atmosphere had gotten denser than they had expected, and they couldn't respond fast enough to get the satellites up higher. And so what's going to happen as we enter this solar maximum, they call it, as the sun gets more and more active, the mission planners are going to have to plan to launch their spacecraft to a higher orbit than where they're at now, where they might now. And that will mean organizations like Starlink likely will just have to launch fewer spacecraft because, you know, it takes mass to get to a higher orbit. Mm. So there's a good thing about all this in that it tends to clear out some of the space debris that's lingering lower in that in the orbits and along the atmosphere. It causes them to come back down and burn up in the atmosphere much sooner than one might have expected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another example other than the Starlink satellites with which they noticed this effect due to the new solar cycle is the Swarm constellation of the European yes. Space Agency. That's a group of satellites that measure the Earth's magnetic field, and they are grouped at an altitude of just more than that of the International Space Station. So I think it's around 460 kilometers, so it's a relatively low orbit. Now, you refer to type of falling from the sky, but you didn't mean it as actually falling on our head, hopefully. But what they noticed is that rather than an altitude decreasing with a few kilometers, say around 4 kilometers a year, it suddenly started to get closer to Earth around 20 kilometers a year, so almost 10 times faster. Now, well, there's many factors of 10 in 460 kilometers, but that effect will become faster and faster the lower it go. I think we mm-hmm. will need some math to see what the effect, if it continues like that, by how much the mission of these satellites will be shortened. But anyway, they appear to be alarmed of the long-term consequences of that. The solar cycle, I mean, it can be quite a few years where you have the higher solar activity. My question would just be, but I mean, it had been like this since the start of the space age, but maybe they are more inclined to lower Earth orbits closer to the Earth than in the past. I'm not sure whether that may be a reason why they are more concerned about it now than in the past.
Well, that's actually a really good point, because what's happened is the dawn of these things called CubeSats, which is a spacecraft that almost anybody can build. I mean, high schools have built satellites and launched them into space. They don't go very high, and oftentimes they don't have propulsion systems. So as the atmosphere thickens up around them and they get a little bit more drag, and as you say, they get a little drag and then they get a little more drag, because what happens is the drag slows the spacecraft down, which lowers the orbit, then it gets more drag, and then it slows it down, and it gets lowers the orbit some more, and ultimately it just spirals into the Earth. But the popularity of CubeSats and small satellites has grown dramatically over the last 10 years, such that we've got a lot of little tiny satellites skimming along the top of the atmosphere that will now be affected by the sun entering its maximum period. As that happens, some of the spacecraft will be able to boost their orbit back up because they've got propulsion systems, and others may not. And so they will circle in and burn up in the atmosphere.
So obviously the ISS has its own propulsion system.
The ISS has its own propulsion system, and visiting spacecraft often give it a boost as well. So, I remember the international or the space shuttle would give a boost to the ISS as they were leaving. They would give a little thrust up so that the space station would move to a slightly higher altitude. But yeah, this will dramatically affect the International Space Station. There'll be more and more reboosts of the ISS to higher altitudes as the sun reaches its maximum over the next three, 4 years.
Yeah, in fact, if you go to our favorite page, we often mention here, heavens-above.com, you will see there's actually a thing called the height of the ISS. And in fact, if you go there, then you can see this typical sawtooth as it's sort of losing height, and then having to be boosted again, and it'll be interesting to watch this over some time, because they give it over about the last 3 years. So it'll be interesting to see if that sawtooth now sort of increases. Of course, another thing that that determines a satellite's life determines the drag is the weight versus mass, actually, to use the proper term, versus size, you know, how big are the solar panels and whatever. So even these CubeSats sometimes have solar panels that unfold and makes them quite big, but they don't have a lot of mass, which means that they will, especially without propulsion, they will much sooner lose speed, or velocity is a proper word, and therefore lose height, and then eventually fall in. So yeah, that's an interesting phenomena happening.
In fact, that's one of the strategies that they use on some of the smaller spacecrafts to assure that they will re-enter when their mission is over, so that we don't keep too much debris in space. Is they have things that they deploy. Sometimes it's like things that look like flaps, like solar arrays, and sometimes it's a long ribbon they drag behind themselves. But anything that will increase the cross section of the spacecraft will cause the spacecraft to slow down and therefore drop its altitude.
Yeah. Just a question on that, Jim. Often they have these mechanisms that can be quite involved to deploy a solar panel, and you need arms and gears and whole design. But I can imagine that it's much easier to inflate something. I mean, you can just have a little cylinder of compressed air. And when you want it to become bigger, and you can just inflate, I just imagine now, inflate a balloon and give it a much bigger surface area. Is that something that has been done? Is that something that can work?
It's been looked at, but I don't think we've done it. That's a really good idea. Maybe we ought to get a university in South Africa to mount a technology demonstration.
I suppose you'll rather use the compressed air to give it to give it a thrust backwards to lose speed rather than indirectly using a balloon. But yeah, interesting idea.
So we have used inflatable heat shields for reentry. So we've demonstrated that we can send a probe up, and as it enters, we can inflate that as a heat shield, basically to slow it down so it doesn't heat up quite so much. But it's designed to make to protect the spacecraft on its way in. The proposal that you're suggesting is you inflate something simply to slow it down, which will then cause it to reenter. That's a great idea. I think it's fantastic.
Actually, as we were talking, I've actually called up this page, Height of ISS, on heavensabove.com. And in mid-December, last 2 weeks of December, the ISS lost a lot of height, almost a kilometer, and which often points at collision avoidance maneuvers. And I see it hasn't actually regained much of it. And definitely, but of course now it's in a lower orbit, and definitely now the slope of it losing height is definitely much steeper than it was in the rest for 2021. But I, of course, like I say, this could be another factor apart from the atmosphere busy blowing up, also because it's slightly lower now.
Let's talk a bit about the launch that took place in New Zealand. It was a launch carrying the so-called Cislunar, Autonomous Positioning System Technology Operations and Navigation Experiment, so-called Capstone. Jim, first of all, who thinks out these names?
That's an art in itself, isn't it? You know, well, I know what happens is people come up, they want a catchy name, and then they try and fit the words that describe the mission to the name. You know, I've worked on missions, you know, some were called polar, wind, stereo, all sorts of things. And then there's some missions that just don't bother with the acronyms, right? Like New Horizons mission, which flew to Pluto, was not an acronym, obviously. So, yeah.
So why was this launch important?
Well, because the orbit that the Artemis program is going to use is a lunar retrograde orbit, and they want to demonstrate that they can get into this orbit with a smaller spacecraft before they start sending more expensive hardware and systems. So we'll send a spacecraft up. It will enter that orbit and operate there and then it'll demonstrate that we can get to that orbit. Plus, it will then supply positioning signals, almost like a GPS in space for the missions that will follow. And so it's important from that standpoint. It's also good to see that it got launched earlier this week, and on board an Electron rocket from New Zealand. That's great.
Jim, that's something that I find quite remarkable with this mission is that compared to the Apollo missions where they got to the moon within, say, 3 days, even though this satellite and the shorter name, actually the acronym is the Capstone CubeSat moon mission, I see. It will only arrive at the moon to be inserted into that strange orbit on the 13th of November. So it's a very long journey, and it appears to be to get there on a very low energy orbit. So not to go the shortest way with an enormous amount of fuel that would need one of these enormous expensive rockets. But it's, actually thrilling that a smaller country like New Zealand can be involved at this level with the Artemis project. And yeah. I hope something that may happen in future from South Africa. It would just be fantastic if we can launch part of missions to the moon eventually. I'm not sure whether there are any plans like that, but we did have some launch capability, and I know they are working on it again. So let's hope something interesting may happen in the future other than just low Earth orbits.
Yeah, I think that would be great, because I think as humanity moves on out beyond Earth, it needs to be an international effort. It can't just be one nation going to the moon and saying we did it. Nowadays, we need to go as humanity and not because of national pride, but we need to do it for ourselves.
Right, Jim, we have to close off there. Your contact details?
I would say reach me through the Facebook group, the RSG, Stella and Planeta. I love answering questions through the Facebook group.
Marty?
Cell phone number 083-625-7154. 083-625-7154.
Buddy?
072-457-9208. 072-457-9208.
En dan die program se e-posadres is sterreplanete@gmail.com. sterreplanete@gmail.com. Ons is volgende week terug. Tot dan, alles van die beste.